Good morning, everybody, and welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. I'll be here until 11 o'clock this morning. This first hour will be an open line and a conversation with Jim Dye, who is the opinion editor of the News Gazette. We ask Jim to come on every couple of weeks, and he talks about some of the editorials that he has written, some of the columns that he has written, and then we talk to him about the events that are going on in our community and elsewhere, and take your calls. So we have a lot of fun, a lot of good time with Jim Dye. This open line means that you can call in with a question or a comment, whatever you would like. You can pick up on some of our headline stories, which I'm about to give you, or you can bring up stories of your own. That's what we do in an open line. Maybe you got some things that have happened that you've heard on radio or seen on television. Maybe it's a movie or a book or who knows. Sometimes the listeners can provide more interesting topics or topics that seem to interest more our callers than I can. But here are some of the big stories that are in our community now. This is a real big one. Champaign City Council is going to listen tonight, and Central High School expansion is at stake tonight as PACA makes its final plea to save the Burnham Mansion. That's a big, big building, and the plans are for Unit 4 to tear it down to make way for parking lot and who knows what else. And this has been the plan all along. And at the last few weeks or so, we've had a lot of conversation about this, or not necessarily on this program, but I mean the people at APACA and the people at Unit 4 and city officials, etc. And if they decide to go ahead and tear it down, then Unit 4 goes ahead with the Central High School expansion. If they don't, I don't know what happens. U of I looks to further restrict the Suburban Express, and Elisa Madigan, the Attorney General, is trying to determine whether the company's policies and practices violate the Illinois Human Relations Act. You're familiar with this story, aren't you? The Suburban Express printed something. I'm not sure if it was in a newsletter or exactly if it was online or exactly where it was, but it was something that a lot of people did not like, and it's to the point now where the U of I is, they've got the Suburban Express pretty well restricted now. I guess you can't pick up or drop off any passengers on the campus. But we can talk about that some, see what you think. We haven't had any conversation about that. I'll go into what they had to say in case you missed it. We can talk about that a little bit. And some Urbana City Council members disagreed on the cause of a racial disparity in the new city data among the Urbana Police Department's traffic stops. This is a topic that we've had on the table for a real long time now. Tom Kasich reports two surprises in candidate filings for federal and state offices. And elsewhere, the Supreme Court allows full enforcement of the travel ban. And the Supreme Court also today will take up the gay wedding cake case. Do you ever think this case would get all the way to the Supreme Court? Well, it's kind of strange sometimes which cases they decide to take up. But this is one, and evidently they're going to talk about it, have arguments today. And Mr. Mueller reportedly subpoenas the Deutsche Bank in Russia probe. I just heard a moment ago that they think that President Trump has some accounts in that bank or is affiliated some way. Turkish Prime Minister warns the Trump administration that recognizing Jerusalem as Israel's capital is what they call a red line for Muslims. I don't know exactly what a red line means, but it doesn't sound good. Texas cop was shot dead in line of duty while serving a warrant. Somebody had been with the police force there for many, many years, and I'm sure he had served many, many warrants. And sometimes you just take these up to the door, and people open the door, and you hand it to them, and that's it. Other times you have to chase people around, and then sometimes people just don't want to deal with you, and as in this case, shots were fired. And a Texas cop was shot dead. Did you ever watch House of Cards? It's a famous Netflix show all about the presidency. Starred Kevin Spacey. And now they don't know what to do. They waited and waited, and finally they say today that there will be a House of Cards show in 2018 without Kevin Spacey. There'll be 8 episodes. This is season 6, the final season. And the show will feature Robin Wright, who was sworn in as president in the previous season. Time magazine unveils the short list for the Person of the Year. They've picked a Person of the Year every year since 1927. The 10 finalists are listed in alphabetical order. We can take a look at those if you like. And Patagonia, the outdoor retailer, has blasted President Trump's announcement yesterday that he will significantly shrink the size of 2 large areas of land in Utah that are designated as national monuments. And the company said later that they will proceed to sue him. So that's just a few of the things that we're going to talk about today. It is 9:13. If you haven't been out this morning, it's a very chilly day here in this area. And it looks like a winter is really on the way. Nothing too severe, but cold and a little snow here and there. So we'll take our first break right here and come back. Who's going to be first today? It's always interesting to me after I give all the headlines and you have a chance to think of the things that you want to talk about. Who's going to jump in first? Who's going to be the first one, and what's the topic going to be? We'll find out after we take our first break. We're back on Penny for Your Thoughts. Well, I guess no one has any ideas this morning. So we'll proceed anyway, because there's a lot of things to talk about and a lot that I didn't give you. Let me ask you a question. If you were in Alabama and there was a man named Roy Moore who was a candidate for the Senate, and some of the things that you've heard about him or that have been written about him or things that he has said or things the president has said, would you back him? Would you vote for him? Well, the president yesterday fully endorsed Roy Moore to back the Alabama Senate candidate after conversations with his former strategist, Steve Bannon, who is the head of Breitbart News, who has advocated Moore's candidacy. Trump's early morning tweets were his first all-out endorsements of Moore, who had been accused of making unwanted sexual advances on teenage girls. They came back after Republican leaders began to back away in recent days from previous threats to expel Moore if he were to win the December 12th election. Also, the Republican National Committee has reversed itself and is once again supporting the candidate. An RNC official confirmed on Monday that the committee will resume its financial support to the Alabama Republican Party's effort to elect Moore. Let's go to Dave. Good morning, Dave.
Hey, good morning, Jim. You asked, and so here I am.
All right. Let me hear. Whoa, you like this guy?
Who, Roy Moore?
Yeah.
You know what? I never judge a man until I walk in his shoes. And something that happened 40 years ago, and it just seems to me like there's a lot of stuff that comes out. Why didn't this stuff come out? And he's been a judge for 40 years. Why didn't this stuff come out? So, you know, I don't know. I wasn't there, you know, 40 years ago. I don't know. It's awfully easy to make an accusation against somebody so many years ago that they can't prove. So, yeah, that's my shoes. But okay. I have two other things I wanted to talk to you about this morning, if I may.
All right, sure. Go ahead.
Yeah, a while back, you made some comments about charities and how it is a good idea to give, and I do agree with that. I give a lot in my church and everything, but you made a comment about United Way. I just ask you to, personally, to do your own research and see how much of your charities that you give to United Way actually goes to the charities versus goes to upper management. You know, you look at Salvation Army, almost 98% of everything that's given to the Salvation Army goes to the actual charity itself to help people out.
You know, Salvation Army is a great organization. So, too, is the United Way. That's easy enough to find out. And there are a lot of charities that come, you know, like you get mail solicitations and calls in the middle of the night and all those kinds of things. There are a lot of people out there soliciting you for money that you don't know anything about. That's to be the last ones I'd send anything to.
Yeah, I just ask that people do their research as to see how much of your charity you give actually goes to the charity itself versus going towards management and overhead. But thirdly, I'd like to make a comment about, you know, the traffic stops in Urbana. If you read the newspaper yesterday, there was a gentleman that was ripped out of his car by four gentlemen because they were blocking the road or blocking a driveway or something like that in a parking lot, and they tapped their horn. Four gentlemen got out of the car, punched the guy across the face through the window of his car, and ripped him out of his car in front of his wife and his child, just beat him. Ambulance had to come. Medical services had to be rendered. Now, I read in the paper that these four individuals are now facing Class 3 felonies, possibly probation up to 2 to 5 years in prison. I know that this guy is an acquaintance of mine. I know him. He's a really nice guy. He ain't got a mean bone in his body. But I know you know Julia Reitz, and I ask you to pass the word out or make a comment that she take a closer look at this and look at the violence that these four men brought out. And I'm sorry, but they need a lesson taught. They don't need probation. They don't need a slap on the wrist. They need jail time. I mean, for somebody to get pulled out of their car for no reason
Who were the four people that pulled them out of the car? Were these police?
Black men jumped out, and you know the black community. You know, I know they're, you know, they say that, you know, they're getting pulled over more and stuff like this in Urbana. But you know what? I've got a police officer that's a friend, and if the police officers are going to patrol the areas where the crime is the highest, and you know what, wherever it is, whether it be a white neighborhood, black neighborhood, Hispanic neighborhood, or yellow neighborhood, or pink neighborhood, whatever the case may be. If the crime is happening there, the police are going to be there. And you know what? You know, I talked to an old cop. He goes, if he follows somebody long enough, you or I, he'll find something to pull us over. You know, I'm not saying that's right, but these individuals, that they have no respect for anybody. They literally had no respect. And respect is taught in the home. That's what my daddy taught me. And, you know, it just, I would never even think about doing something like that in my life to another individual. And people like this have no respect for life, no respect for you, no respect for me, no respect for the police, nobody. And they need a lesson taught. And this guy, he's got to see his face. He looks like that big purple cartoon character that they used to have for kids on TV. His face is solid purple and black. And it's just, it's ridiculous. Absolutely. I don't see how somebody could do something like that.
Were these people arrested, or what happened to them?
Yes, they were arrested. There were witnesses. They were arrested. And like I said, they got arrested, and they're being charged with class three felonies. And I read in the paper that punishment could be probation or 2 to 3 5 years in prison. You know, I'm asking Julie Reitz, to do her job and see that these men are punished for what they did.
All right. Thank you, Dave. You bring up some good points. I'm glad you called. Thank you. Let's go to Bill. Good morning, Bill.
Morning, Jim. If Roy Moore did what he said, said about the 14-year-old, obviously that would have been illegal. If he's 32 and he's asking out 18-year-old women, most people wouldn't see that as appropriate. But then again, my dad and his wife are 12 years apart, been married for 38 years, and they're both some of the finest people you ever want to meet. But one thing kind of made me suspicious is almost the first thing that came out about these ladies was, oh, we voted for Trump. I don't see that that's relative. I mean, yeah, you can say it is. It shows that they don't have bias. But, you know, you can say you voted for Trump, but you didn't. But I think the people of Alabama kind of don't like the people from New York and Washington, D.C. telling them how to vote. I think that's a big factor in it.
Yes, it is. In fact, some of them have said so. They said, get back to New York and they get out of here. We'll take care of things in Alabama.
And it is fact.
So he's going to win. It looks to me like he's going to win now. He's well ahead, and the president is supporting him, and a lot of people down there like the president. And he's also now being supported by the RNC. So he got a lot of support, and he's in first place. And I'd be surprised if he gets beat now.
Yeah, it is suspicious. It comes out 4 weeks before. It happened 40 years ago. I think people are tired of the gotcha October-type surprises or whatever. And he does deny it. I mean, it's a lot of people say, well, the witnesses are very credible. And that's probably true. I'm not saying that either. But it's, you wonder when it comes out like that. It's just, it has happened. Men have been falsely accused before. And men have been guilty, too, but sometimes they're innocent. I mean, they're not all guilty, but whether he is or whether he isn't, I guess it's up to the...
This one woman, this 17-year-old, her name is Debbie Wesson Gibson, had this scrapbook. You probably know about that. And in the scrapbook, mm-hmm. it talks about Wednesday night, 3-4-81. Roy Moore and I went out for the first time. We went to eat at the Catfish Cabin in Albertville. I had a great time. But there again, this is a guy 31 dating somebody 17. Not unheard of, not very smart, but not something that happened recently, that's for sure.
And I wonder if I don't know, there was a yearbook or something he supposedly signed. But I don't think her lawyer, Gloria Allred, was willing to turn it over to any handwriting expert. I've heard people say, well, your handwriting can change in 40 years, so we don't know if that's proof. But I would think if he were in his position, there would be documents with his signature on it from back then that you could compare it to. So.
All right. Appreciate your call, Bill. Thank you so much. 928. We go to Irene. Hello, Irene.
Good morning.
Morning.
Another beautiful day. It's pretty cold, though. I wanted to say that we need to say happy birthday to Illinois. 200 years, that's quite a long time.
Yeah, I got a gentleman coming on Thursday that's going to give us all the details of the Illinois Bicentennial. His name is Joe Alexander. It'll be very interesting, I think.
They have some pretty pictures in the News Gazette today, too, mm-hmm. from different towns that are celebrating.
Sure. Anything else?
Also, the moon. There was a beautiful cold moon over somewhere on the university. I think it was a horse farm. And it's really a beautiful picture, too. The fellows that beat up that person need a lot of prayer, and also the person that was injured. That was a terrible thing.
Yes, it was. There'll be the investigation, and hopefully they'll get what they deserve. Appreciate your call, Irene. Thank you so much. The Washington Post had reported that a woman who claims she dated Moore when she was 17 says she has evidence proving that there was a relationship. Her name is Debbie Wesson Gibson, and she told the Washington Post yesterday that her scrapbook includes indications of their relationship. There again, it's been a long time ago, and it appears that Mr. Moore, the Senate candidate, is on his way to victory because he is now in the lead. The people down there seem to be supporting him. The president is supporting him, and so is the RNC. So. I think it'd be kind of a surprise now if he gets beat. It's 9:30. Brian Barnhart is here with the news headlines. We'll come back with more Open Line on Penny after that. Then after the 10 o'clock news, we'll visit Jim Dye, the opinions editor of the News Gazette. Here's Brian. This is Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. The phone line's open at 356-9397. You can text us on the Castle Heating and Cooling text line. That is 351-5357. Well, there's going to be a very interesting meeting at the Champaign City Council tonight. Hours from now, not too many hours, there will be a decision made, perhaps. They'll make it tonight. I think they will. Who knows? Anyway, we're talking about the expansion of Central High School, and we're talking about the preservationists who want to save the Burnham Mansion. This is a local landmark, and Todd Satterthwaite, who's the former Urbana mayor, remember Todd? Called on the city council to grant the Burnham Mansion local landmark status tonight against the recommendation of the plan commission. Such a status could prevent Unit 4 from tearing down the mansion. They intend to tear it down for a parking lot. This is something that's been in the works for a real long time. Everybody knew it was going to happen. Or that it was proposed. And as I recall, back some time ago, Unit 4 offered to work with PACA about some of these houses they were concerned about, whether they would give them or let them pick out parts of the mansion or the houses that they would keep. And preserve, or they would, in some cases, if there was some house that needed to be moved and then that was feasible, they would help them do that. Seemed to be working with them. But we'll find out what happens tonight. Let's go to James. Hi, James.
Hey, how are you today, sir?
I am good. What's going on with James today?
Well, on the lighter side of things, I wanted to mention two things. Start with weather. 1 year on Christmas Day, I went riding around on Harley with a T-shirt and a leather jacket on. It was 70 degrees on Christmas Day.
What year was that? Last year?
I think it was like 81 or 82.
Oh, okay.
And my friend and his brother, his mom and dad, after Christmas dinner at noontime, they went sailing on Homer Lake. 1 year later, on Christmas Eve, the police couldn't even get out. There were snowmobiles going down Green Street.
It's
right through campus.
It's pretty amazing the weather we've had here in November and now starting in December up until today have been phenomenal.
Well, the other thing I wanted to mention, well, you mentioned books.
Yeah.
I have some suggested readings.
All right.
The first book I got mention of was from a book by Hunter S. Thompson on the Hell's Angels. Well, this book, the author is Nelson Algren, and the book is entitled A Walk on the Wild Side.
Yes, I read that book years and years ago. Nelson Algren is from Chicago, I believe, and a well-known author, and that was quite a book back in those days. I haven't read it for many, many years, but why did you like it so much?
It was just very interesting. I like Hunter Thompson's description of it was a saga of American white trash in New Orleans during the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And the other book worth mentioning is it's kind of a sad book, but it's by I can't remember the author's name now. It's Tobacco Road.
Yeah, that's. So John Steinbeck, isn't it?
No.
It wouldn't be Steinbeck?
No, it wasn't Steinbeck. It was... Oh, I can't remember that.
No, okay. That's okay. Well, I'm glad you brought up some books. I love books. I love to read, and we ought to have more conversation about that on the air, that's for sure. Thank you, James. Let's go to Mary. Hello, Mary.
Hi. I just wondered, yesterday my husband and I got a notice from Social Security about our new benefit amounts for the upcoming year.
Yeah, I did too.
And I was quite surprised that the amount they deduct for Medicare medical insurance went up as well, and in fact it took my whole 2%.
So you're back to the same amount as you were going to get last year, right?
Exactly. And I didn't realize that they had a percentage there, I guess, because my husband's actually cost even more. So I thought it was kind of a straight across the board amount that they took out, but that's not the case. And just wondered if this was happening to other people too.
I would imagine. Yeah, I think everybody would be treated the same on that part of it, that's for sure.
Yep. Well, I just found it interesting, but anyway, sure enjoy listening to you, Jim, and we'll just miss you terribly when you go. So.
Well, you're very kind, Mary, and I'll miss it too. It's been a long journey.
Yes, it has, and you've helped us all along the way. So.
Well, I hope so, a little bit.
Thank you, and have a good day, Jim.
Okay, bye bye. Talk to you.
Bye bye.
Yeah, that was so scary. I guess you shouldn't say use the word surprise because Social Security is not ever going to give you the amount of money that you want or need, probably. But no gains this time. Sean is next. Hello, Sean.
Hey, Jim, love your show. Kind of piggybacking on the last caller, wondering if anybody else had this issue, not with Social Security, but with healthcare. I'm a single father of a teenage child, and we were forced into the Obamacare system for health insurance, and they were gonna they made us pay $455 a month for health care, and it pretty much broke me down financially for a whole year.
Wow, $455 for how many people? For you and
me and my dog.
Oh my goodness.
And so I went in there, and I'm getting an echo back on my phone. Sorry, but
you went in to talk about it.
It's going to go up, and so I wondered how much it was going to go up. And they told me, and they didn't even take an account of my income or anything, but they said it was going to be $975 a month, and we have no pre-existing conditions. Barely go to the doctor, stay pretty healthy. So called my primary care doctor, and she said, look into a place called Liberty Health Share. And they actually pay the fees to my primary doctor, some of them. So after their fees, after they help us out with our fees, we're only going to pay $10 a month for our health care, or just our visit to the doctor, unlimited, $10 a month. Unlimited visits include the medicine, you know, prescriptions or whatever, and the monthly fee for Liberty Health Share, like a co-op, is only $270 a month. So I just wonder how many other people are dumping Obamacare and finding out about Liberty Health Share.
Yeah, I think there's more
really
than
helped us out.
There's yeah, more than one company, more than one company like that. In fact, I hear is it Rush or Sean Hannity or somebody advertises that on their program.
Oh,
and
yeah.
All I know about it is what you've said and what is said on the commercials. I have not looked into it, but.
Yeah,
so you jumped.
Well,
you jumped right on that, didn't you?
Doing this. That's like a fourth of what I'm supposed to be paying, and they said, "Well, not everybody knows about this yet."
Yep. So. Well, they soon will probably, Sean. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. And James is next. Hi, James.
Hey, it's me again. I remember the author of Tobacco Road.
I am having a hard time understanding you. I don't know if it's your phone or what, James.
Erskine Caldwell.
Okay, well, go ahead.
Erskine Caldwell.
I'm sorry. What is that? What are you talking about?
The author came. The author's name for Tobacco Road, Erskine Caldwell.
Oh, okay. I'm with you now. You're trying to tell me the author's name of Tobacco Road, right?
Yeah, Erskine Caldwell.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. Yeah, I said I misspoke when I didn't misspeak. I just was guessing that it was sounds like one of the kind of the books that I think he was saying William Faulkner, was he? Let's go to Brian. Hello, Brian.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Good.
Good. I got an echo on my end, so I'll try to get through to you. But the gentleman who called about the Obamacare premiums, well, my wife and I have two sons, 15 and 12. We pay $900 a month just to cover me. That's not counting what we pulled out of our check of our sister and the two boys.
My goodness.
And this is a, you know, and actually what we're doing is going to help the life through her job, because if I was on Obamacare itself, it would be even worse.
So your wife is on Health Alliance?
Yeah, she works for a school district. I won't mention who, but she does work for a school district.
Okay, so you can be on that policy, right?
Well, I am, and it's $900 a month. And if I went through the exchanges, it would be even worse.
Well, I don't know how people pay those kind of premiums.
I'm kind of confused. I must have had a connection.
Yep. I'm losing you again, Brian. We're having trouble with when a person has a cell phone like that, and which most people do now. Sometimes they just we're just not able to understand exactly what they're saying. 9:49, a quick break here, Mr. Bond. Mr. Bond has returned from his early morning assignment. Did you bring me anything to eat? No. Did you go to Panera's or someplace? You went to Panera's. They have bagels and things like that in there, don't they? Very easy to carry. Just put them in a little sack and bring them in and say, here, Jim, I was thinking about you this morning. I don't think any of that happened. Anyway, we'll take a break. We're coming right back. This is an open line till 10, then the news, then Jim Dye. And let's go back to the phones here on Penny. We go to Frank. Hello, Frank. Good morning, Frank.
On the issue of Social Security benefits, my Social Security benefits were established from time served in the military and in the Social Security, and also required the Social Security from employment as a summer teacher. So my established Social Security comes from being a member of the military and a teacher. My benefits from my pension are penalized by $6,000 a year because I was not allowed to use my earnings as a teacher for my pension. However, I do receive some Social Security benefits, and I cite them because the Social Security benefits I receive penalized because I receive a pension from the teacher retirement system. The same and required in the Social Security. So in effect, I'm losing out about $9,000 a year because we were compelled to pay for the Social Security and contributing the teacher retirement system. This is the best kept secret somebody needs to look into that.
Okay, well, thank you, Frank. We'll get some insurance people on here to discuss some of these things. They're very interesting, and they seem to be so many different stories. James is next. Hi, James.
Hey, Jim. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure your caller's aware of a model called direct primary care. It's a grassroots movement being done by doctors' offices to try to combat all this insurance mess. And so there are some clinics in town. One's called Square One Healthcare. One's called Chisholm Center for Your Health. And also one called the Mantell Center for Your Health. Mm-hmm. And essentially, people pay a low flat fee for unlimited care from their doctor's office and negotiate a cash pay rate for a cholesterol panel of $6 cash or a blood count of $2.
Can you go see any doctor that you want to, or do they have to be in a?
Well, these are primary care clinics.
Yeah. Let's go to Rick. Hello, Rick.
Yes, hi, Jim. I know you're near to going to the news, so I'll make this quick. I just went back to the Champaign Library book by Katie Turr, T-U-R. It's called Unbelievable. She covered Donald Trump for the last year of his campaign, and it was a very interesting book, and I like to say the Champaign Library has it, and it was a very interesting behind-the-scenes look at what it was like covering Trump.
This is covering him during the campaign and not since he's been the president? Or
Yes, right. The book ends right after she has been, or right after he has been elected. And he varied between courting, trying to court her favor and slamming her. There were several times she would be on the press platform at the opposite end of the rally, and he was on the stage pointing, saying, "Katie, you know, you reported this wrong," or something like that. And she and the other NBC and MSNBC people had to have guards the last few months of the campaign. They had to have guards with them because when they leave, you know, after the end of the rally, they have to have someone come out because the crowds would turn and boo them and you know, shout things at her. And but it's a very interesting book. You get kind of a behind-the-scenes look from a media viewpoint of the Trump campaign.
Yeah, and if you got another book written by somebody that was on the same trail and covering the same campaign, you'd get perhaps a different story. It's really it's really hard to know. I've said many times, we'll know 50 years from now what's happening now. Isn't that about how long it takes for us to finally find out?
I think so. That's a good point.
And we'll see. But anyway, that sounds like a very interesting book. Thank you, Eric. Appreciate the call. Well, one story we didn't get to is a very interesting one, I think. Has to do with the Suburban Express. University of Illinois officials are evidently trying to figure out how to limit this this bus service. It's from Champaign to Chicago. Operates on the campus property, and Lisa Madigan, the Attorney General, has subpoenaed records from Suburban Express to determine whether the company's policies and practices violate the Illinois Human Rights Act. Suburban Express came under fire over the weekend for what U of I officials called offensive, bigoted, and insulting statements about Chinese students in an email advertisement to its customers traveling during the holiday season. Basically, it said that you won't feel like you're in China when you're on our buses, a reference to the U of I's nearly 6,000 students from China. Didn't have time to get into that. Maybe we'll hold that story over and kind of watch it and see what happens and talk some more about it later. We're coming up on 10 o'clock, time for the CBS News. That'll be followed by Jim Dye, the opinions editor of the News Gazette here on WDWS in Champaign-Urbana. Oh, we're having such a good time here. Jim Dye is here, and we're talking about books and courts and who knows what else. If you have any questions or comments for Jim, just give us a call at 356-9397, or you can text us at 351-5357. And we talked in that first hour, Jim, about books. A gentleman called and said that two books that he liked very much were Walk on the Wild Side. That was a book some time ago, but written by Nelson Algren. And then any of us decide what was... what happened, or who the author was of Tobacco Road, and we finally Googled it, which is the
way
you
find out
anything.
Through the magic of Google. That's how you find out everything, right? Well, give him the answer, Ant. Give him the answer.
Erskine Caldwell.
See, that is a noble name for a Southern writer, isn't it?
That is. Southern writers wrote a lot of good books, didn't they?
They did.
We went to William Faulkner's house when we went down to play down at Oxford, and it's kind of like a little museum down there. And he was one of those writers that when he decided to write, would put white paper on the walls of the room, decorate the entire room with just white paper that you could write on. Then he would stand up and write notes and make outlines and everything on this paper. He'd have the whole book around him the whole time. That'd drive me crazy.
You know, that's interesting how writers go about doing that sort of thing. I think that the hardest thing, particularly for people writing history, is how do you keep all those notes in front of you, and you have everything, I guess, supposed to be, I mean, you have to be superbly organized, which I'm not. So I write a 30-inch story, and I end up with papers all over my desk, and I don't know how anybody...
I've seen your notebook of appointments,
yeah, it's a kind of a mess, isn't it? No, there's no organization to it. It's just, that's why I'm frequently searching desperately through piles of paper. But, yeah, I would think that just the organization of writing one of these really impressive biographies, like the new biography of Grant by Ron Chernow, I don't know how you would begin to keep that sort of thing straight, but I'm sure there's an art to it.
I had Guy Fraker on the other day, last Friday, and they were talking about various things, Lincoln, of course, and he said the work on Abraham Lincoln now is done by, and he named a writer, maybe you know who it is, he's on the staff now at SIU, or University of Illinois at Springfield, and I said, what's his name? He told me, and I've forgotten already, of course, but he said, the only reason to buy this book is if you want to use it as an encyclopedia. He says, that's the way I do, because it's about 2,500 pages.
Oh, boy.
I said, who would ever read something like that?
Well, didn't Carl Sandburg write like three or four volumes on Lincoln?
Yes, he did.
And, of course, Robert Caro was working on his fifth volume on the biography of Lyndon Johnson. Now,
Dortha Kern's a good one.
Dortha Kern Goodwin's wrote a mammoth biography.
Of biographies. Anyway, bringing us up to 2017... story this morning in the Tribune about, I think you've written about this before, have you not? The judge with Alzheimer's allowed the clerk to put on the robes, and here are three cases?
Yeah, it was, you know, that's an interesting question, because it's one of those things people don't think about much, is how do you deal with the judge who gets in trouble or who has mental issues because of some sort of physical infirmity, like Alzheimer's? You know, you can't be a judge with Alzheimer's, can you? Unless you just flip the coin, I don't know. But, you know, there's a thing called the Judicial Inquiry Board and the Illinois Courts Commission, which is one of those agencies most people don't, two agencies most people don't know exist, and they end up having to deal with that sort of thing. And so I guess they came up with the most humane solution they could, which is to say you're retired and you get your pension, and that's that.
Found the judge was mentally unable to perform her duties. And Illinois Courts Commission noted that Valerie Turner, first elected the bench in 2002, has Alzheimer's disease. The commission said it was sympathetic to the mental health issues, adding that it is not, its decision was not meant to punish her. But then in a separate case, we're talking about Rhonda Crawford, the law clerk who put on Turner's robe and presided over traffic court cases. Criminal case is ongoing.
Yeah, Rhonda Turner, the clerk, was actually running for judge at the time, and she won the election, and there have since been, I'm not even sure where that ARDC, well, I guess it would be a Judicial Inquiry Board case now. I'm not even sure where that stands, but they did also file, criminal charges against her, too, for impersonating a judge?
Crawford has pleaded not guilty to one court of official misconduct, a felony, and one court of false impersonation, which is a misdemeanor.
Yeah, that's one of those cases where, you know, I'm not sure a criminal prosecution is really appropriate, but I think they're using the criminal prosecution as leverage to force her to resign her elected position, which I don't think she is interested in doing, because, you know, being a Cook County judge is a pretty sweet gig. And it's one of those cases where the judge says, go sit on the bench and you try a case. I don't know what she's supposed to do in that situation except politely decline, which she did not do. And then, of course, there was the ensuing effort to cover the whole thing up, which became uncovered.
Maybe she thought this is a way to get some experience for my when I'm elected to the...
But in that case, she should go over to the U of I and preside over moot court, not the real thing.
Let's go to the phones for Paul. Paul, you have a question or a comment for Jim Dye?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this for a couple of years. regarding.
You're kind of cutting out on us, Paul.
Every call we've gotten today has been the same way, Jim. I don't know what to tell our listeners, but it's on our end. I know that because it wouldn't happen seven or eight times in a row. Paul, try again if you would. Go ahead, Paul.
Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, a little bit. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is regarding the Lexington County. And I've been seeing that Tate has no home here on Brown County. And I was looking at this column, and I believe Tate has a home in this column. Specifically, he talks about the deep ignorance on literally any issue unrelated to his own self-promotion is what he said. And you talked earlier about healthcare on the first hour, and that person has a really bad, I believe, Trump does have an idea about healthcare rather than an ignorance. But I've been seeing the Reluctant County for a couple of years, and I think he said so many hateful things. I just want to make comments about that.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Let's try Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hi, Jim.
Morning.
And the other Jim.
Yes, sir.
I'm calling it Reluctant Town. I mean, this was ostensibly an entertainment or humorous type piece and position in the paper. And it's all just a hit piece on the president with regularity. Is there any way that somehow some oversight could be put in and get him on opinion, get him off of living?
You know, I couldn't get enough of your words there. You're cutting in and out so much.
I know. This has been terrible. I haven't heard any of the other phone callers either. Something's wrong today.
Yeah. So I just didn't hear enough of your question, too. I mean, I think it had something to do with Trump. I think it had something to do with our news coverage of Trump. And, you know, I think we do have... we do have oversight. I don't know what specific story you're referring to, but I know there's a lot of really negative stuff from the national media about President Trump, and some of it justified and maybe some of it not. But in terms of, you know, those are stories that come to us from wire services, and, you know, we don't really have much control over the content. We do have control over where we put it and whether we run it, but without actually knowing what story you're talking about, it's hard for me to judge.
We'll take a quick break here. It's 10:20. Back with Jim Dye after that.
Well, we got a problem here, don't we?
And we're back with Jim Dye. I apologize to those of you listening this morning. We are having difficulty with our phones, and it's on this end, and I'm sure it's frustrating to those of you calling in. We'll try with... one more call here, and if that doesn't work, if we can get it fixed, we'll just do the rest of the program without taking calls. I hate to do that on a call-in show, but I don't know. There's no sense in putting several calls on the air when we can't understand them, they can't understand us, and the people listening, I'm sure, can't understand them.
It's almost a perfect analogy for the state of Illinois, you know.
Let's go to Anna Wall. Hello, Anna Wall.
Good morning, both of you, my friends, and I would like to hear you all discuss double standards, which is in the news this day.
Well, sorry, Anna Wall. No more calls, Ed. Just ridiculous. I'm not going to embarrass our callers and ourselves by trying to take any calls when you can't get them on the air. So you want to talk about some stuff, Mr.
Whatever you want to talk about. There's lots of things going on.
Wounded Rauner on the run against the angry Democrats and the alienated Republicans. Who are his friends these days?
Well, he does have some friends, but, you know, when you're down, everybody's trying to kick you, and that's his situation right now. The Democrats are pretty much united against him. But his biggest problem, I think, right now is the fact that his decision to sign instead of veto a taxpayer-funded abortion bill, really has alienated one of his core group of supporters. And, of course, now he has opposition in the primary, which I don't think is going to threaten his renomination, but it's going to reflect deeply on his political problems. And so you're going to be hearing a lot in the news media about how can Rauner overcome this, can he overcome that, and can a Republican win an election in a solid Democratic state when one of that Republican's key groups of supporters is going to take a pass. And so I'm sure there'll be a lot of opposition to him in the primary where he'll win. The question will be in November, will those hardcore critics of his, will they actually vote for a Democrat or sit out the election? And I think there's a good chance that they will, and that we're going to see a Democrat. That they will sit out the election or vote for the Democrat, because their goal now is to defeat Rauner. And if you defeat Rauner, then you're going to get a Democrat, and then we're back in the same boat with one party rule in Illinois, but I think that's where we're at.
Well, Rauner yesterday, I saw him on the television last night, was banging his hand on the podium and about Michael Madigan.
Well, I'm sure Governor Rauner is very frustrated, and he came to the governorship with ideas about how he could fix Illinois' economy, and that's his real issue, not social issues, economic issues. And he has been pretty much checked at every turn by the Democratic General Assembly's refusal to even consider any of his proposals. And so, you know, he says Madigan is the problem, and then you hear people say, well, you should work with Madigan, or you should do this for Madigan, or a real governor could get these things done. Well, you know, in a state with divided power, it's hard for one party, like the governor, to force his agenda on an unwilling partner, in this case the General Assembly and Mike Madigan. So that's where we're at. And, you know, we've seen the two-year budget battle, which didn't help anything at all. And we've seen a tax increase, which, you know, provides some needed revenues, but doesn't really go anywhere to address the core economic problems that Illinois has in terms of attracting job creators and growing, I hate to use the word growing the economy, but I guess I'm stuck with it.
Well, where did that word ever come
from? I don't know.
I hate that.
I hate that word, too. I apologize for using that. Another one I hate it when they use the word impact as a verb. We're going to impact the policy in the state of Illinois. You know, that's just bureaucrat speak.
And how do you grow the economy?
I don't know. I think we can help the economy grow, but I'm not sure we can grow the economy.
There
At least not and use good grammar.
Either your grandma or your papa, either one.
There you go, that's right.
But Rauner was saying last night, I don't lead this state. He was talking about Madigan again. I said, I don't lead this state. I'm trying to get to the point where I am the leader of the state.
Well, that's another thing. You know, that's one of those sound bites that sounds good. I'm not in charge here. So this phrase, I'm not in charge here, is being used by his critics, including Jeannie Ives, who is the Republican candidate against him, and say, oh, see what a feckless governor he is. He admits he's not in charge here. Well, nobody's in charge of the state of Illinois. In the state of Illinois, we have divided power. You have a governor, you have a legislature, you have the judiciary. We have checks and balances, so nobody's in charge. And frankly, we should be glad that no single person is in charge, because if one single person was in charge, I imagine I know who it would be. Michael Madigan. He's got enough influence as it already is. But so when he says something, that's a good soundbite. But nobody, and there's not ever going to be a governor who's in charge.
They were asking him about her entering the race,
yeah.
And he says. Well, in every race, you have some fringe candidates.
Well, he's trying to portray her as a fringe candidate, and to a certain extent, she is a fringe candidate. But just because she's a fringe candidate doesn't mean she's not an influential candidate. You know, she can affect this race big time, and he knows that. Now, he wants to write her off as somebody who is, Gus Hall, the Communist Party candidate, guy used to run for president every 4 years. She's not like that. I mean, she's the real deal in terms of there. She has a constituency. It may not be a big constituency, but it's a big enough constituency to hurt him because he only won re-election last in 2000. He only won election last time by 140,000 votes, I think it was. He got 50.3% of the vote against a weak Democratic candidate. It's hard for a Republican to win statewide in Illinois.
10:31, Brian Barnhart has the news headlines. We'll come back right after that with Jim Dye. Welcome back to Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin with Jim Dye, the opinions editor of the News Gazette. And to say one last time, we are having phone problems on this end, and we can't get the callers on the air to the point where we can understand them, so we've decided not to... until we get it fixed, we won't bother you with trying to take a call and not being able to understand, which is frustrating for both you and for us. I heard the word pressing brought up just a moment ago.
She's back, huh?
She's back.
She's tanned, rested, and ready. Now, you got to love Laurel. I mean, she's a fighter to the end. She's never going to quit. And so she decided she had her six-month sabbatical, and it's time to get back in the arena. And I think she's a very credible candidate for county treasurer. I'd be surprised if she doesn't win. But I get a kick out of Laurel because, you know, she's got a lot of passion, brings a lot of passion to her public interest, and she's not going to back down from anybody. And so here she is again.
I heard her talk the other night, and she was saying she'd, you know, she'd rested a little bit, and now she's ready to go. And I kept waiting to, is she going to say Carl Hospital here? She never did.
Well, give her time, Jim. I think she after one day, I think she probably had enough rest. Was ready. She just had to wait for the election season to come around, and I'm sure it was probably killing her. But yeah.
I agree with you. I think she'll win.
Yeah, I think she's going to be a really tough candidate. You know, the John Farney, who maneuvered himself to be appointed to the vacant treasurer position from his second-term position as the auditor, I'm not sure he was counting on Laurel being a candidate, and I think he's going to have his hands full. Even though he's done a good job as auditor, I mean, I don't think he has Laurel's profile.
No, and her Democratic following.
That's
that
right.
They have over in that area. But this is for the whole county, though,
this
right?
is for the whole county. You know, and of course, Laurel has rubbed over the years a lot of Democrats the wrong way, and that's one reason why she got pounded in that mayoral primary in Urbana. But, you know, I think the Democrats will be more than happy to clasp her to their bosom and elect her treasurer. Because, you know, they want a county office, and the only county office they have now is the state's attorney's office. So this is a chance for them to get back in the game.
I was showing Jim during the break a story here in the Tribune today. It's on the front page of the sports section. Got several paragraphs there. Then there's a whole page on the runover, and it has to do with football in certain areas of the city of Chicago, in the Chicago Public Schools. And here's a great lead. Listen to this. The first game of the Chicago Public School football season was less than 2 weeks away. The players of Englewood's Robeson High School gathered for practice on a humid August afternoon, all 11 of them.
Right, and I think the point of that article was that some of these schools have such low populations that they can't begin to come close enough to field a sports team. And that raises one of the issues in Chicago and the Chicago schools is that they have a lot of schools there that don't really have much of a population. And, of course, Rahm Emanuel has tried in the past to consolidate some of the schools, meaning closing some of the schools because they don't have the students. And there's been terrific political pushback, so which is not surprising in Chicago because everything in Chicago revolves around politics and money and the school system, not necessarily education. So what's Rahm going to do about that? I mean, Chicago is not so well off financially that it can afford to run virtually empty schools on a regular basis.
Big suburban high schools regularly draw 100 or more players. Robeson has 128 students.
Right, right. Well, that goes back, too, to the quality of education you're getting in the Chicago public schools, which is very poor, and so you have a lot of people trying to get out and go to the suburban schools where they think their kids can have a better chance.
So So the coach has 11 players there, and he says, I got one rule. The rule is you can't get hurt.
That's right. Well, there's no problem getting playing time there, huh?
But just to wrap this up, 14 Chicago Public School High Schools dropped their teams this season. And while the casualties included Whitney Young, which has 2,100 students, most of the schools had fewer than 300 students. Small student body can make it difficult to field a squad in a sport that, thanks to specialized positions and frequent injuries, needs plenty of athletes. The Illinois High School Association has no minimum roster requirements, but teams that reached the state small school finals in recent years averaged about 40 players.
Yeah, you know, I'm not even sure that playing the entire game is even safe. For, you know, 11 guys playing all four quarters, taking every hit, I would have some concerns about that. You know, you could get around that just by combining the sports programs in three or four high schools, but that's not the real issue in Chicago. The real issue is how many students do they have? What's the quality of the education? How much are they spending on? How much is the teachers union shaking out of the school district to support a bloated school system? And, you know, we'll be hearing, probably hearing something about it in the legislature as we go forward. And also from Rahm Emanuel, because, you know, how long can he afford to spend money on schools with no kids in them? Just because the union wants him to.
It is 10:43. I think we got a little behind here on our commercial breaks. We need to take one. We're coming right back, Ed, after this quick break. 10:46, we're back with Jim Dye here on Penny for Your Thoughts. Well, Jim, it wasn't too long ago that the News Gazette ran a page filled with people's pictures and bios, and they had one thing in common. They'd all been charged with sexual harassment.
It's going around a lot, isn't it?
One page isn't enough now. and you wrote a column about a double standard, question mark, race combines with politics as Washington wrestles with accusations of sexual misconduct. What's this about?
Well, you know, it's about Senator Franken of Minnesota, who's white, and the Democrats seem to be standing by him, but Congressman Roniers from Michigan, who's black, and people have been demanding his resignation. And as a matter of fact, they got it today. Representative Conyers announced today that he's going to resign. And in the best tradition of machine politics, do you know who he's endorsed for his as his successor?
Again, who?
His son.
Oh, I thought I was going to say his wife. I don't even know if she his
no,
wife.
No, I think she just got out of federal prison, so I'm not sure she'd be a very good candidate. But no, he's endorsed his son, which is, of course, you pass these things down from generation to generation. But, you know, some of the Conyers supporters have said, hey, why are you being so hard on our guy if you're giving the other guy a pass? And you know, that's one of the issues that's going to be coming up as this bipartisan scandal kind of sweeps Congress. Who's going to be forced out and who's not going to be forced out, and what are the reasons for them? And, of course, we still have the pending election campaign involving Judge Moore in Alabama, and what I'm reading now is, and I find it kind of hard to believe, is
he's in now,
that he's going to be elected. And well, if that's why is that? Because, you know, that was political poison a month ago. Why? What has changed? And is it changed because we've had all these other stories and it's all bipartisan? And I mean, people from both parties. So maybe that's not. I mean, I think it's disqualifying Moore's activities, but people just say, oh, that's just politics, and who knows if it's true, and we're just going to write it all off. I don't know what to think about it.
These are all, you know, allegations, and I talked to Judy Reitz about this the other day, and, you know, the statute of limitations on
Even if it was criminal behavior, yeah. Even if it was criminal behavior, and a lot of this stuff is not criminal behavior, it's just offensive or boorish behavior, yes, or whatever you want to call it. But it's not a crime, per se, and this did happen 40 years ago. And he seems to have lived a life since then. Since he found his favorite 14-year-old and married her, the woman that he married, she was 24 when he was 38. So I guess I've read that he was really looking for a wife. I mean, I would think he was maybe looking for love in all the wrong places.
The allegation was from a 17-year-old when he was 31, I believe.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know. It's
but now you're right. Things have shifted. The party and the president have both endorsed him.
Yeah, the thing about that though is that if he gets elected, then they're stuck with this guy, and he's going to be in the Senate for. Well, I'm not sure how much is left on the balance of Jeff Sessions' term, but he's going to be, you know, at least 2 years and maybe as much as 6 years. And I think the guy's kind of a nutty guy, and he's going to be, I think the press is going to try to make him the face of the Republican Party, and that's not going to be very good for the Republican Party, because this is a guy who got removed from the bench from the Alabama Supreme Court twice for misconduct, and that misconduct was refusing to follow the opinions of a higher court because, you know, he said God told him that he shouldn't do that. So I'm not sure that the Republicans win. I still think they lose, but we'll have to wait and see about that.
The media has sure been quick to dismiss people, to fire them right on the spot.
Yeah, I have a problem with this rush to judgment. I mean, I think even in Springfield, there's been that story about the lady who accused the state senator of sexual harassment, and I think his behavior was questionable. I'm not sure it was as serious as she suggests, but all of a sudden he's got people calling for his resignation, including the Tribune, and he's got like three or four opponents now in the primary. So my guess is that this guy is in serious trouble, although he might have enough core supporters to get through a primary, in which case he would be a winner in the general election. But he's been grievously wounded, and nothing involving him has really been proven, except that he engaged in a series of what you can call cringe-inducing Facebook comments with this woman. You know, clearly he's flirting with her, and she's also flirting with him. So, you know, who knows? The bottom line is that nobody's ever there to witness these things, so you're getting one person's perspective.
No, it's a he says, she says.
Yeah, and now the new position is, well, if ever a woman ever says it, then you must believe it at 100%. So, okay, I would tend to think they're telling the truth in most circumstances, but not all circumstances, and how do you separate one from the other? Yeah, if you weren't there.
You wonder how many of these are copycats.
Right, but you also know if you have a number of allegations against one guy, then you think, well, there might be something to that, as opposed to one allegation against one guy. But they're dropping like flies all over the country, Jim. These entertainers and political people and public officials are being accused. And once you're accused, it's hard to remove the taint.
Yeah, they're just going network for network. Fox.
That's right. We haven't got who's out. CBS hasn't been hit yet, and ABC. We've still got pillars to fall at the CBS and ABC. Yeah. Of course, Charlie Rose did do some work for CBS, though, in addition to PBS.
It's he was the main guy on their morning show, and we've got Matt Lauer, of course. I think
it's kind of funny because Matt Lauer put this statement out, said, "I just feel such shame. I just feel such regret, and I'm working on myself now." I think what he really regrets is the fact that he's been caught. He seemed perfectly happy with the status quo.
Not only that, the second thing he did after apologizing was start to work on getting his $30 million salary they owed him.
That's right.
They got that much left, and it's kind of like a football coach.
Well, you know, Jim, it's not about the money.
It's not about the money.
It's about the principle.
It's the love of the game. 10:53, we're coming right back, Mr. Bond, after this quick break. We're back on Penny with Jim Dye from the News Gazette. I like this. Soda tax leaves bad taste. The soda tax is dead, but the controversy is not.
Yeah, Cook County decided they want to have a tax, a penny per ounce tax on sugary drinks like Pepsi and Coke and a lot of other things, and some that didn't even have sugar in them, like sugar-free soft drinks, because they wanted some money out of the taxpayers, and they told them it was good for them, but the taxpayers did not agree, and they actually had one of those rare things in Cook County, which was basically a citizen revolt, and you had a bunch of politicians on the Cook County board who thought, whoa, this is getting out of hand, and so they repealed it, and I think sending a message to elected officials everywhere that you got to be careful about what you tax and how much you tax.
You're talking in this editorial, about the president, Tony Preckwinkle, and who demonstrated how far out of touch she is with her constituents.
Well, yeah, she said, even, you know, that she was the one who pushed this thing through, because she was out of touch and didn't realize the reaction would be. And then after it hit, after everything hit the fan and the taxpayers are in full revolt, she said, gee, I never thought there'd be a problem with that. And, well, you're hitting people right where they live when you start raising taxes. Big, I mean, this is a substantial increase. I mean, this raised the price of a case of Coke almost $3. And people know that, and they don't like it. And she thought, well, why should there be a problem? Well, I understand why she thinks that, because, you see, in Cook County, the voters there never react to anything except maybe to grumble a little bit, and then they just vote for the same politicians all over
that
again.
That they always had, yeah.
Yeah. So I can see, I mean, I can see her position because, you know, she's never experienced this before, so why should she now?
Incumbents rule in the city of Chicago.
Well, it's a one-party county, and when you get a one-party rule, it doesn't matter what party it is, you're going to have abuses, you're going to have politicians who think they're not accountable to anybody, and that's just par for the course.
Have you paid much attention to the Unit 4 PACA controversy?
You know, just a little bit. I know that they want to save that that big house on Church Street.
Burnham.
Yeah.
Burnham Mansion.
Which is quite a house. I mean, no question about it. It is a magnificent structure, but I'm not sure it hasn't seen its better days, and it's in the wrong place.
Yeah, if they'd said we want to tear this down and build something here, but the fact they're going to make a parking lot out of it didn't help.
No, never helps to build a parking lot, except, but, of course, you need parking space.
This is a big deal. Tonight, the Champaign City Council is supposed to rule on the three properties that they're talking about, to take, see if they take the Planning Commission's recommendations. And if they do, it will come down. If they don't, I don't know what Unit 4 is going to do. I mean, that's a big piece of property, and they've planned to have that as part of the expansion for a real long time.
Yeah, I don't know what they would do with it. I don't think they want to be in the real estate
business. Start over.
They want to be in, I think they're just going to have to build around it, which would be a big problem. Do you remember when the drugstore in Urbana wouldn't sell to Busey Bank, and so we had that, and they built the bank around the drugstore until the drugstore's lease ran out? We might have one of those situations again.
Yeah, we have athletic fields on one side, a parking lot on the other side, and this Burnham Mansion in the middle. Anyway, it's a very serious business, and we'll learn more about it tonight at the council meeting. Well, Jim, sorry about the phones, but a lot of people wanted to talk to you, so we'll get them next time.
We'll get them next time.
Our time is up this morning. Talk to you tomorrow morning at 9 on WDWS in Champaign-Urbana.